Welcome to The Drive. Over the next 2 hours, we'll break down everything that's happening in the sports world, locally and nationally. Got an opinion? Hit us up at 843-652-3776. The Drive is socially networked. Get us on Twitter at 1003TheTeam or on Facebook at facebook.com/1003TheTeam. Now buckle up, take the car out of park, and let's go to the Sports Radio 100.3 The Team studio in Murrells Inlet, South Carolina, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
Another day, and another day without Wally B, but we got Rusty here. It is Pat Payone and Rusty on The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team, coming to you from our Murrells Inlet studios. And it is finally here, ladies and gentlemen. Finally here. I don't count those play-in games, those what they call first four. Today is the beginning of the NCAA tournament, and so it is one of the more exciting days of March, at least for sports. And so it's going to be a nonstop day of just glued to the television watching all of these games, especially if you have some teams that you definitely need to win because you have them going far. Welcome to The Drive, though, and to let you know, hour number two is going to be all about the NCAA tournament. We want to hear from you, 843-652-3776. Get your picks on your Final Four and your national champion and why. Again, that's going to be an hour two. We want to hear from you guys. Write down the phone number, 843-652-3776. But starting off with what happened last night in college basketball. Coastal Carolina. First round of the CBI, the College Basketball Invitational, and they got a big win over Hampton University, 83-67, on the back of Jalen Shaw scoring 22 points and DeMario Beck breaking out for 21 points. But this game was much closer than the final score actually depicts. CCU hit 11 of its final 12 field goals over the last 6-17 left in the game to turn a 58-57 lead into that final score of 83-67, outscoring the visitors 25-10. With that late-game explosion, the Chanticleers ended the game shooting 57% from the field. Wow, that's incredible. That's an incredible second half. And really, the second half saw the Chanticleers shoot almost 70% from the field, making 22 of 32 shots. Colton Ray-Sincere ended the game with 12 points, while Arturo Labinowitz making a start in place of the injured Siobhan Wiggins, and he also scored 12 points. Elijah Wilson added 11 of his own. As we've mentioned all season long, when Coastal Carolina wins the rebound battle, they win the game, and they dominated the boards last night, beating Hampton on the boards, 44 rebounds to 28. Wow. Wow. Impressive victory for Coach Ellis and the Chanticleers. Now, with the win, they move on to the quarterfinals. They will face Loyola, who opened their tournament up in their opening round game in an upset fashion, taking down George Mason. And once again, the Shants will have home court advantage hosting Loyola on Monday, March 25th at 7 p.m. at the HTC Center. And so just be aware of that. We will definitely have that coverage on our airwaves, Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. So congratulations to Coach Ellis and the Chanticleer men's basketball team as they got a huge win over Hampton last night, 83-67. Again, they will play on Monday against Loyola, who pulled the upset on George Mason. That's not all the basketball that happened last night. We had the final two games of the Final Four play-in games, and I got both of them wrong. I thought NC Central would win over UC Davis. I thought Providence would beat Southern California. To start off with the 16 matchups, UC Davis, I mean, they overcame 18 turnovers. 18 turnovers in this game and rallied in the second half to win its first ever NCAA tournament game, beating North Carolina Central, who really shot poor last night. Their season is done. But Chima Monarchy had 18 points, 12 rebounds, as UC Davis won 67-63, and they earn a trip to Tulsa to play, congratulations, the number one seed Kansas Jayhawks on Friday. They were actually down by 3 points at halftime, and then the Aggies went on an 11-2 run to start the second half and led it by as many as nine before streaky North Carolina Central forced some turnovers and chipped away at the lead. But UC Davis had an 11-2 run the second half, and North Carolina was just one of nine from the field during that stretch. So UC Davis moves on. North Carolina Central's season is done. The other game of the first four, or play-in games, whatever you want to call them. I like them play-in games because that's exactly what they are. That was supposed to be a pretty good game, and I think it lived up to the label of a pretty good game. As just last year, Providence actually beat Southern California by one, and so this was a revenge game for the Trojans of Southern California. They got the revenge as they beat Providence 75-71. Benny Boatwright for USC scored a career-high 24 points as they rallied from 17 points down. Two comebacks in the first four games. It's unbelievable.
That was the seventh largest comeback in NCAA tournament history.
That's nuts. That's nuts. Now, congratulations to Southern California. You got a big win, but they move on to play number six seed SMU in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It'll be the second meeting of the season for these teams after USC, Southern California prevailed 78-73. Southern Cal is 5-1 all time against SMU. I do not believe that they will be getting that win. But Providence led at the half by 15 points, went up by 17 to start the second half, and then Southern California mounted a furious rally. They closed to 5 points at the 10-minute mark, went up 61-60 on a jumper by Chemezi Metu off a turnover with 6:46 left, and Providence outshot Southern California 49% to 42%, but the Trojans outscored them in the second half 46-27. Those numbers just don't even make sense to me, but hey, congratulations to Southern California. They got a big win. They will be moving on to take on SMU. That does wrap up the first four play-in games. So now we actually have action that, people are putting money on. They get to look at their brackets now today. And it is wall-to-wall action from about noon until about, I think the last tip is 10 o'clock tonight. So don't expect me to come in bright-eyed and bushy-tailed tomorrow. I will be I'll be staying up late probably to watch these games. But Rusty, let's get into today's day in birthdays and today's day in history. And after yesterday's great birthdays, today's a little lackluster, but still pretty good. Today, March 16th, back on 1981, Curtis Granderson, the MLB center fielder who's played for the Yankees, Mets, and Tigers, it is his birthday today. He's a three-time MLB All-Star center fielder who led major leagues in triples in 2007 and 2008 as a member of the Tigers. He played for the Yankees between 2010 and 2013, then signed to the Mets prior to the 2014 season. And he's made World Series appearances with the Tigers in 2006 and the Mets in 2015. So happy birthday to Curtis Granderson. Also born this day, March 16th, he was born in 1989, Blake Griffin, NBA power forward who plays for the LA Clippers. He won the league's Rookie of the Year award in 2011 while playing for the Clippers, and he was selected first overall in the 2009 NBA draft. Also born today, 1994 on this day, March 16th, Joel Embiid, the NBA center slash power forward for the Philadelphia 76ers. Selected third overall in the 2014 NBA draft by the Sixers. He played one season in college basketball at the University of Kansas before declaring for the NBA. That leads me to my sports birthday profile, and today's birthday profile is Ozzie Newsome, born on this day 1956, former American football tight end for the Cleveland Browns and inductee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and current GM of the Baltimore Ravens. He was the 23rd overall pick in the 1978 NFL draft by the Cleveland Browns. He was named the Browns Offensive Player of the Year his rookie year, the first time in 25 years that a rookie had received that honor. Went to the Pro Bowl in 81, 84, and 85. And in 1984, he set a franchise record for receiving yards in the game with 191 yards. That stood 29 years until it was broken by Josh Gordon in 2013, who had back-to-back games of 237 receiving yards and 261 receiving yards. He did not miss a game. This is back to Ozzie Newsome. Did not miss a game in his 13-year NFL career, playing in 198 consecutive games as a Brown with 191 starts. He finished his career with 662 receptions, 7,980 yards receiving, both Cleveland franchises, and 47 touchdowns, fourth all-time. Now, he was in 2002 named the GM of the Baltimore Ravens, making him the first African-American to occupy that position in the NFL, and had previously been a front office executive with the Ravens since 1996 and with the Browns from 91 to 95. Now, he earned his first Super Bowl ring as a GM when the Ravens defeated the Giants 34-7 in Super Bowl 35 in 2001 and earned a second ring after the Ravens defeated the San Francisco 49ers in the Harbaugh Bowl in Super Bowl, I think that is 47. That was a score of 34-31 in 2013. So happy birthday to Ozzie Newsome. Turned out to be a pretty darn good exec. And that's just another example of you know, there's some examples of players not working out as execs or coaches. Well, Ozzie Newsome is definitely an example of it working out for his team. Today's day in history, March 16th, I start back in 1964, Paul Hornung and Alex Karras are reinstated into the NFL after a one-year suspension. Now, in 1963, there was a major scandal erupted, and Hornung and defensive tackle Alex Karras of the Detroit Lions were suspended from football indefinitely in April of 1963 by Commissioner Pete Rozelle for betting on NFL games and associating with undesirable people. That last part that makes me chuckle. And I look up at Rusty, and he's chuckling at the same thing. The betting on the NFL games, I understand. Associating with undesirable people. What's the definition of that? I think that had to be explained a little bit better. But he was forthright in admitting to his mistake, and his image was relatively untarnished. In 1964, his suspension was reevaluated by the league, and both him and Karras were reinstated on this day. In September of 2006, with an interview with Bob Costas, he stated that it was his belief that it was Lombardi's constant lobbying to Pete Rozelle that got him reinstated back into the NFL. In exchange for Lombardi's efforts, Hornung agreed not to have anything to do with gambling, to stay out of Vegas, and to even forego attending the Kentucky Derby, which he had done annually every year. Wow. That's pretty incredible. I mean, I can understand, you know, wanting to be back in the NFL, but never going to Las Vegas or going back to the Kentucky Derby, which you supposedly go to every year, you know? Showed how much he really wanted to be back in the NFL. Also on this day, moving to 1991, March 16th, New York Nets coach Bill Fitch is the fourth coach to win 800 games. And he's more known for being successful developing a number of teams into playoff contenders. Before he entered the professional ranks, he coached at the University of Minnesota, Bowling Green State University, and the University of North Dakota, also his alma mater, Coe College. But two of his teams qualified for the NCAA tournament. He was also, you know, which is very well known because of a book, Drive, The Story of My Life, which is the Larry Bird book. Fitch was a U.S. Marine Corps drill instructor, and that Bird equates to some of his own strong work ethic that Fitch really instilled in him. It's pretty cool. But during his 25-year pro coaching career, he was often hired in an attempt to improve failing teams, although he currently ranks 10th among NBA coaches in all-time number of victories with 944 to complete his career. He is also second all-time in losses with 1,106, only behind Lenny Wilkins. He was an NBA champion in 1981, two-time NBA Coach of the Year in 76 and 80, and an NBA All-Star Game coach in 1982. He coached in 2,050 games with 944 wins and 1,106 losses, as I mentioned earlier, and that is a winning percentage of 460. But, I mean, that's understandable when you're trying to rebuild teams, and so you're going to have a lot of losses before you start getting those wins. But Bill Fitch on this day is the fourth coach in NBA history to log 800 wins for his career. Also on this day, the final one, 1996. Iron Mike Tyson TKOs Frank Bruno in the third round to gain the heavyweight title. This is billed as the championship part one. Now, if you don't know who Frank Bruno is, it's okay. I didn't know who he was either, so I had to look him up. But at the time of this, he had been a professional for over 13 years, and he was the former European heavyweight champion and had received several shots at the world heavyweight title over the course of his career. The first actually came in 1986 when he was knocked out by Tim Witherspoon for the WBA title. He then fought Mike Tyson in 1989 for his undisputed world championship but was knocked out in the fifth round. And then He fought Lennox Lewis for his WBC title in 93 and lost that one as well. He would then have to wait 2 more years to get another title shot. Now, who was that against? You guessed it. Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson was actually released from prison on parole in 1995 for the conviction of raping Desiree Washington in 1991. He had then fought 2 fights since his release, beating Peter McNeely by disqualification and knocking out Buster Mathis Jr. After that victory against Mathis, Tyson was placed ahead of Lennox Lewis in the line of contenders for the WBC title, and his promoter, Don King, who also promoted other fighters as well, drew up a contract where Oliver McCall, one of the guys that Don King promotes, would defend his title against Bruno, and the winner of that fight would be forced to defend their belt against Mike Tyson in their first defense. So, yeah, congratulations. You have the title. Yeah, your first defense, Mike Tyson. But during the first round, Bruno would receive a cut over his left eye. Tyson would continue to attack Bruno in the second round with, Bruno grappling with Tyson as a frequent basis to slow down Tyson because he was just so strong and so fast. But less than a minute into the third round, Tyson dodged a Bruno jab and proceeded to unleash a 13-punch combination that caused referee Mills Lane to stop the fight and award the victory and the title to Mike Tyson via technical knockout TKO. 13 punches.
It was brutal. I remember watching that. It was brutal.
That's incredible. A guy who is the heavyweight title holder in going into this fight gets a 13-punch combination thrown on him. And granted, it's Mike Tyson, who is, you know, of our generation, probably one of the best fighters at the heavyweight, weight class. But still, 13-punch combination? Put your gloves up. Maybe he couldn't because he was just dazed. I don't know. But on this day, Mike Tyson TKO'd Frank Bruno in the third round to gain the heavyweight title. All right, Rusty, let's tell the folks what they're hearing on today's show, and I really appreciate those who are getting in their tweets already. Keep them coming in at 100 through the team. We'll get to those in just a little bit, what you can comment on. We already talked about Coastal Carolina getting the win in the first round of the CBI last night against Hampton. They will play Loyola on Monday at the HTC Center, 7 p.m. If you can't go, you can listen to it on Sports Radio 100.3 through the team. We are going to go through some NFL free agency fits. There are some players that I think could still make a difference for some teams. And so we're going to talk about the fits that they have. And one of them has even changed over the night. We'll talk about that as we had a signing in the NFL of a running back to a team that is looking for a running back. So we'll have that conversation about some free agency fits. I think it's also the time to have that question. If the Houston Texans don't get Tony Romo, who in the hell is going to play quarterback? Because right now, it does not look good. So that's got to be the strongest option for them, is to go out and get Tony Romo. But if it comes down to it where they don't get Tony Romo, we'll have a discussion who plays in Houston at the quarterback position. Wrapping up the first hour, have you guys heard about the Clemson graveyard? This is a great story, and I cannot wait to tell you about it. It's something I'm even a big Clemson fan. I had no idea about this, so I can't wait to tell you about that. We will also go through some of the top NCAA tournament performances since 2011. I think there's some good ones in there. I believe there's a top 10. We won't give you all 10, but there is some great performances that have happened since 2011. We will, it's going to be time for you guys. We get started today at noon. That is the 12:15 is the first tip-off of the NCAA tournament. So I am going to go give my bracket picks. If you missed it on Facebook.com/100 through the team, our Facebook page, I did it live yesterday on Facebook Live. Well, if you missed that, I'll go through them on the air today. I'm not only going to go through my upsets in the first round, I will pick straight through the Sweet 16 all the way to the national championship in 2 different segments. So I want to hear from you guys. Go ahead and give us a call, 843-652-3776. Not only give me your final four picks and why you believe they could win their region, but give me your national champion. I want to hear from you guys. We may all be talking about the 7 same teams, and I want to hear if there's really any other teams that others could consider. As you know, we're winding down to the last couple of hours to get your brackets filled out. And speaking of which, go to our website, teamrotobeach.com. Click on the $1 Million Madness Bracket Challenge picture. Go ahead and sign up. put your picks in before that first tip-off of 12:15 today. Got to get them in before that. And if you make a perfect bracket, you could win $1 million. But not only that, if you finish in our top five of our local contest, top five, remember that, you will get great prizes courtesy of Budweiser through Backyard Sports Bar and Grill, who is sponsoring this entire March Madness, Million Dollar Madness bracket for us. And they also are putting up on the line a 50-inch flat-screen TV for the number one overall bracket. Now, Rusty and I cannot win this. So we want somebody out there to win this. We already have, as I checked yesterday, I think over 40 contestants. We want more. Go to TeamMyrtleBeach.com, click on the Million Dollar Madness Bracket picture, sign up, put your picks in before the first tip-off of the first game, and you can not only win $1 million, but you could win a 50-inch flat screen courtesy of Backyard Sports Bar and Grill. Going through the polls on Twitter for you to participate in on Twitter at 1003theteam. With running back Latavius Murray signing with the Vikings, where does running back Adrian Peterson play next year? I think that's an important question because a lot of people just believed he was going to go back to the Vikings. We'll have that discussion coming up. If the Texans do not get Tony Romo, then who plays quarterback for them next season? Who do you have in your final four of the NCAA tournament? I want to hear from you guys. Not only go on Twitter and let me know, call us in, call it into us, 843-652-3776. And who do you have winning the NCAA title? Another one, we want to not only hear from you on Twitter at 100 through the team, we want to hear from you guys in hour number two, 843-652-3776. But NFL talk coming up in hour number one, NCAA basketball tournament talk coming up in hour number two. We'll start off the show talking about some free agency fits coming up on The Drive.
If you know one thing about sports, it's more than both of them put together. Pat Payone and Wally B. Morning 7 to 9 on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. 28 minutes past the hour. Pat Payone and Rusty hanging out with you. And we had a signing yesterday in the NFL with the Vikings inking a deal with running back Latavius Murray, formerly of the Oakland Raiders. But this deal is for 3 years, can be voided after year one, meaning that he could be, again, a free agent next year. But Murray is turning 27, and he is the epitome of a workhorse, or he was the epitome of a workhorse for the Raiders in 2016 as he led the team with rushing with 788 yards and 12 touchdowns in 14 games. I still think that I thought there was a market out there for him, and out of the running backs that were still available, I thought that he would be one of the ones that was signed first because he doesn't have injuries that really associated with him. Minor injuries, I should say. He has minor injuries that are associated with him, not major injuries like a Jamal Charles or Adrian Peterson. But I think this is a good signing for the Vikings. I really do. It adds a number one running back to their system that they didn't have last year after Adrian Peterson went down. So I like that signing. But I think that poses a question because I think a lot of people were really thinking Adrian Peterson would go back to the Minnesota Vikings after seeing so many teams kind of just go by the wayside saying, oh, yeah, we've considered Adrian Peterson, and nothing happening as of yet. I thought that Minnesota would be the team that he'd go back to. Now, it's not saying that he still couldn't go back because he definitely could. But this is definitely not going as planned for Adrian Peterson, and we'll get to him in just a little bit. But right now, With a couple weeks into the books, or I guess it's 2 weeks now of free agency, only five of the original top 30 free agents are still available. Now, that number is going to continue to go down in the coming days as teams look for bargains. But there are some intriguing names still yet to find a home. Let's talk about them. I think Colin Kaepernick, a quarterback, is a pretty intriguing name. Think about this. The totally different trajectories of both RG3 and Colin Kaepernick. RG3's career is pretty much over. I don't know of a team that's probably going to go out there and sign him as a starting quarterback. Can't think of one. Colin Kaepernick, he deserves another chance as a backup because he's had some really positive moments when he was in San Francisco. Now, some people believe that Kaepernick is on the blacklist. He just don't want to touch him because of everything that happened last season with him kneeling during the national anthem. I say get over it. If you think he can be a special talent in your offense, you sign him and you work with him. And he even said himself, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, he will not be kneeling for the national anthem anymore. The problem that Colin Kaepernick has is that he's not a natural fit for every system. He needs a specific system that is garnered to his talents. And the Broncos showed interest, at this stage last season, but Kaepernick said he wasn't willing to take a pay cut to join them. What a mistake that is. He probably could be starting for the Denver Broncos right now. Right now, the Broncos are out of the picture. But the Broncos' old coordinator, Rick Dennison, is currently running the offense for the Buffalo Bills. Does that not make sense for him to go ahead and sign a one-year, two-year deal and be the backup behind Tyrod Taylor? I mean, Tyrod, he's a good quarterback. I'm not going to say he's great and he's not special, but he fits in that offense. And who runs the same type of offense? Colin Kaepernick. I think that could be a pretty good landing spot for him. So I will say the best fit for Colin Kaepernick right now, it's got to be the Buffalo Bills. Jonathan Hankins, the defensive tackle, is another intriguing name. Now, if you don't know who Jonathan Hankins is after 4 years in the league, don't be surprised. I really didn't know who he was either. But he is a monster. He is a 320-pound run stuffer who's played for the Giants the last couple of seasons. The defensive tackle market has really been slow to develop throughout free agency. Think about this. Dontari Poe, who is a pretty good player, still is available. Benny Logan has still not signed a contract as of yet. And Hankins right now will be turning 25 years old at the end of the month. He boasts impressive upside and experience as a three-year starter for the Giants. This looks destined to have a short-term deal with a team looking for some value. I'm looking at the Atlanta Falcons, the Indianapolis Colts, the Miami Dolphins, and the Green Bay Packers. Those are all teams in the market right now for a defensive tackle. And the first three teams on that list, the Falcons, Colts, and Dolphins, all met with Dontari Poe. So if you're looking to get a Dontari Poe-like player for less money, his name is Jonathan Hankins. Now, the Colts have already batted an eye, I guess you can say, at Hankins early in the free agency, but nothing has happened yet. So I'm going to say that the Colts are probably the most appropriate fit for Hankins because they just really need help on defense in every position. I couldn't even name you a defensive player right now for the Indianapolis Colts. And I know a lot of rosters in the NFL. I can't name you a single player on the roster for the Colts defense. Can you?
No, I can't.
No, it's hard. So we already talked about we're going to talk about Adrian Peterson and his best fit. Jamaal Charles, it shouldn't be a surprise right now that Jamaal Charles has been forced to wait for a serious suitor. He did meet with he's scheduled to meet with the Seattle Seahawks after they went ahead and signed even after they signed Eddie Lacy, but when Jamaal Charles comes out, and we know the whole history of Jamaal Charles, great running back, special talent, injury prone. He went to NFL's Mike Garofalo and said to him, "I want to sign with a Super Bowl contender." So if I'm taking that into consideration, there are two AFC teams that really come to mind. I think the Steelers. I think the Steelers is a good piece, or a good place for Jamaal Charles to end up. D'Angelo Williams is turning 30, and they could use a backup to Le'Veon Bell, which you don't ever know if he's going to be injured or you don't know if he's going to get suspended. So I think Jamaal Charles is a good piece for the Steelers to have. I think the Broncos are also a possible landing spot as well. They have so many questions in the backfield because of injuries to C.J. Anderson and the shaky rookie season we saw after Devontae Booker, who could not hold on the ball. So right now, and teams might wait because of how loaded this draft class is in this upcoming NFL draft. So teams might wait on players like Adrian Peterson and Jamaal Charles till after the draft to make them signing. But I'm going to say that I really can't make up my mind between the Steelers and the Broncos. I think those are the two best places for Jamaal Charles to go. He won't have to be a featured three-down back at either place. and he could really shine in being maybe a one or two down back with the Steelers, and a one or two down back with the Broncos. So I think those are the best two places for him. Chase Daniel, who was released by the Eagles, is also an interesting proposition. Could we see Chase Montana get signed by a team and possibly get the starting position? It's a possibility. Think about, you know, the Browns. Realistically, they have a job opening as their starting quarterback. The Jets. I think the Jets are a pretty interesting piece as well. Now, there is also talk that he reunites with his old friends in New Orleans as a backup behind Drew Brees. That's not any fun to talk about. So I think that the biggest interest, that if I'm a team, if I'm the New York Jets, I have a huge interest in Chase Daniel. It gives him a true chance to start. And I think he's shown enough to be able to try and garner a starting position in the NFL. And the Jets really have nobody right now on their roster other than Bryce Petty. But be careful what you wish for, Jets fans. This has blow up in your face all written all over it. I'm going to say the Jets are the best position for Chase Daniels to go to. Going back to Adrian Peterson. We already talked about it, you know. He's met with multiple teams, including Seattle, which signed Eddie Lacy, and will continue to, you know, go ahead and talk to Jamal Charles as well. But I think the cost he is asking for, the price tag, is primarily the reason why teams are not, you know, really aggressively pursuing Adrian Peterson. He's turning 32 years old next week. 32 years old, and he wants to be a starting running back and garner a wage of $6 million at the least, at the bottom end. That's not going to happen. He wants the ball 25 times per game. That is traditional running back numbers. That's not how the NFL does it anymore. This is a passing league, and you need a running back who not only can handle the ball 15 times maybe out of the backfield, can block for you with a passing game, and can catch the ball out of the backfield. Running backs like Adrian Peterson are kind of getting phased out of the NFL. Two possible landing spots are the Buccaneers and the Raiders. I think the Raiders are possibly the best opportunity for him, because not only will they get their starting running back, but maybe they can convince him to sign a three-year contract, maybe being valued at $5 million a year. It'd be very interesting to see him in a Raiders uniform. Very interesting. I think the Raiders are the best position, but still, a lot of people believe he still will go back and sign with the Minnesota Vikings, and that could make a ridiculous two-headed tandem right there with Latavius Murray and Adrian Peterson. That way, you don't have to use Adrian Peterson as much, and maybe he doesn't get injured. But I like that position as well. Going to Twitter real quick to see what you guys are responding with. I put the poll out there with Latavius Murray signing with the Vikings. Where does Adrian Peterson play next season? And we got a text or a tweet from TJ. He says the Green Bay Packers. That's an interesting concept right there. I could see that as well. I could also see Jamal Charles going to the Green Bay Packers as well, being able to not only be a scat back, a type of running back who can run not only inside and outside, but catch the ball to the backfield. Very interesting to see where these pieces fall, though. I'm still kind of up in the air. I really don't know. When we come back, the Houston Texans, who knows who's going to play quarterback for them? We'll talk about that, have that discussion coming up. But got to let you know, a presenting sponsor of The Drive is HTC. HTC, this is life. Connect with it. And it doesn't matter if you're a power user or accustomed to lightning-fast downloads or someone who just needs to check your email, HTC High-Speed Internet has a plan and pricing perfect for you. HTC High-Speed Internet has installation and 24/7 tech support all for free with no hidden equipment fees. For more details, you can call HTC High-Speed Internet at 843-369-8982. Again, that phone number, 843-369-8982. HTC, this is life. Connect with it. We'll be back.
Back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. Got a funny message on Facebook. Mike writes in, As a Bills fan, I would rather see the Bills sign Tim Tebow than ever, ever, ever see Colin Kaepernick as a Bill. He is a self-centered locker room cancer. That's awesome. Thanks for that message. Appreciate it. Tim Tebow, really? At least Colin Kaepernick can throw the ball down the field. I don't want to get into a Tim Tebow rant, though. You know, it's been nearly a week since the Houston Texans traded Brock Osweiler to the Cleveland Browns, and still today, they technically don't have a starting quarterback. I mean, all the speculation surrounding Tony Romo going to the Texans, Tony Romo's still under contract with the Dallas Cowboys, and while he is linked to the Broncos and the Texans, either by trade or release, that still hasn't happened yet. Now, the Texans are more interested in Romo if he's available as a free agent and reportedly will not trade for Romo. I think that's the way to go. He turns 37 next month. 37 years old. And he's had extensive injury history, only played 5 games in the past 2 seasons. Why trade valuable commodities for a guy you don't even know could play for a single game for you? But if Romo doesn't work out, which is a possibility, who else is out there? Well, I think you first start off with the smart money. It has to be turning to Tom Savage, who is technically the only quarterback on their roster right now. I mean, he played well last year. He played well in the 2 starts that he played for the Houston Texans, but he's still really unknown. He's unknown as a commodity because he hasn't really had many opportunities to start. Savage was injured in 2014 and 2015 and really didn't have the option to win the starting job last season after the Texans went out and signed Brock Osweiler to that massive contract. Now, even if Houston does somehow, some way sign Tony Romo, given the injury history, they're going to need a reliable backup. That should be Tom Savage. So the smart money is saying that Tom Savage still stays on this roster somehow, some way. And it's either the starting quarterback or the backup quarterback. I think another way to go is Jay Cutler. Think about this. Have we seen a Houston quarterback who can really has a strong enough arm to throw the ball down the field to DeAndre Hopkins, who is a top 10 talent wide receiver in the NFL, who can sky with the best of them? He can jump over pretty much every cornerback in the entire NFL. Have we seen a strong arm in Houston yet? No. Jay Cutler has a very strong arm, and it would definitely be able to take advantage of some of these offensive weapons the Texans have. The only issue is he might clash with either every player on the roster or head coach Bill O'Brien. And we saw what happened last year with Bill O'Brien clashing with Brock Osweiler. That led to Brock Osweiler's demise in Houston. Now, this is the biggest name outside of Tony Romo on the market, but I don't know if I see that as a right fit for the Houston Texans. I would like to see Jay Cutler on the Texans. I think that could be a pretty nice relationship on the field. It's the off-the-field issues that I have some concern about. How about RG3? We just talked about him possibly having his career over. Now, like Romo, RG3 spent most of last season injured, and he has a lot less upside. In 5 games, he's completed 59% of his passes for 2 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. But RG3 is a former Heisman Trophy winner at Baylor. I mean, he has a serious history of knee injuries, but could it make sense to bring back a hometown guy at a discount and let him and Tom Savage battle it out? Possibly. I think that's the last worst-case scenario at the end of free agency before the season starts. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick is also an interesting piece as well. Now, Fitzpatrick has a history in Houston and could lead to his return. But his days as a starter are likely over after posting a league-low 69.6 passer rating last season. He's already said he's not returning to the New York Jets. And so does he equal a starter or a more reliable backup quarterback? I got to say backup quarterback. He's not a starter anymore. So that's not going to be what Houston really needs. Now, unless they have to turn to Savage and don't draft a quarterback, that's kind of tough for me to say that Fitzpatrick returns to the Houston Texans. That leads to the last option and might be the best option. Stick with Tom Savage, draft a quarterback in this draft. Now, the issue is they have the number 25 overall pick in the first round. So it's not easy for them to get a quarterback at that position or even trade up because they've traded a lot of their assets away. It's also not going to see any of the top three quarterbacks fall to the number 25 pick. I mean, it's Clemson, Deshaun Watson, UNC's Mitch Trubisky, and Notre Dame's DeShone Kizer. Widely expected to go day one in the top 15 picks of the NFL draft. So that leaves one guy from the state of Texas that they could be targeting. That is Texas Tech's quarterback, Patrick Mahomes. They may draft him with that 25th overall pick if they believe he is worthy of that pick. Now, also, you could say if they go ahead and get Tony Romo, why not draft Patrick Mahomes as well? That's a possibility as well. You would then have three quarterbacks on your roster with Tom Savage, Tony Romo, and Patrick Mahomes. One of the Tony Romo who can come out there and play right now for you, maybe for multiple games, maybe. You got Tom Savage who can easily be the backup quarterback on this team, and then Patrick Mahomes who is the third string quarterback who can sit back. Not only learn from Tony Romo, learn from Tom Savage, but also learn from Bill O'Brien, who has almost quoted himself as the quarterback guru, although we haven't seen that in Houston. It also makes you wonder with all these guys who call themselves quarterback gurus who come from the New England Patriots offense, is it because they're good quarterback gurus, or is it because of Tom Brady?
Tom Brady.
It's because of Tom Brady. How do these guys keep getting jobs? Honestly. Maybe Josh McDaniels is onto something. I don't want another job. That's because you'll probably suck if you go somewhere else without Tom Brady.
That's exactly right.
Could be. But I think that, the best position, stick with Tom Savage. The only issue I have here is this team is ready to win the Super Bowl now. Now, could they? No, I don't believe so. I think the Patriots win it. I said it last week or this week. I can't remember which. All my days run together. And I don't know even if adding Tony Romo puts you into that category of winning the Super Bowl. So you got to go with it's just so hard for me to pick. Tony Romo is option number one. Tom Savage, option number two. And then drafting a quarterback in the first round is option number three. I think those are the only options you can really consider. Maybe Jay Cutler is a 3B. Maybe. Maybe. Going through some the responses on Twitter, Kevin goes back to Adrian Peterson saying, I could see him in Green Bay as well. And then he also says, why don't the Houston Texans go out and get Uncle Rico? Because he could throw a ball over the mountains. Thank you, Kevin, for that comedy act that you brought to the show. When we come back from this next commercial break, something I had never known about Clemson University and what the Clemson football team does. I think it's pretty awesome. I could also see how some fans look at it and be like, why? That's coming up on The Drive. Welcome back to The Drive. There's just some songs that just bring you back to a time in your life, and that song makes me think about driving around in high school in my first Jeep I ever had. I don't know why. It was like this weird 2000 hair band that was just unlike anything else, and they sounded weird, and they dressed like girls. Not that I like them. Personally, I thought this song was pretty awesome. But anyway. Continue to go on Twitter at 100 through the team. Answer all of our polls. Let us know. Mark writes in, what about Jimmy Garoppolo to the Houston Texans? I just don't think they have enough valuable assets to trade. Unless they're thinking about trading J.J. Watt. And first of all, he wrote Jimmy G. What has garnered this guy getting a nickname in the NFL yet? His name is Jimmy Garoppolo. He is not Jimmy G. He does not deserve a nickname just yet. Let him win a couple games. He's played in 2.5 games so far in his entire career. End rant. You guys know, I'm a huge Clemson Athletics fan. My older brother went to Clemson, so I have family ties, and I had no idea about this. Had no idea. And I saw this article. I actually got it texted to me by a friend who is an Alabama alumni. And he said, how ridiculous is this? So Clemson has a graveyard. That's right, a graveyard with headstones near their practice facility. And they added four new tombstones to that graveyard they have. The tombstones, they represent road victories over ranked teams. So teams that they beat that are ranked that did not happen in Death Valley. So what did they add this year? They added a win over number 12 Florida State, winning the ACC title against number 23 Virginia Tech, dominating Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl win, and then winning the national title against then-ranked number 1 Alabama. Now, interesting note here. There are two Oklahoma tombstones in this graveyard with wins over the Sooners in the 2014 Russell Athletic Bowl and the 2015 Orange Bowl. Do you think this is ridiculous, by the way, Rusty, that they have a graveyard near this practice facility that has, you know, I'm looking at some of the tombstones here. They have the school's name, their rank at that time, the date, where it was at, and the final score.
I consider it par for the course for a school that pets a rock before a game.
Hey, come on. Howard's Rock is tradition and history. I don't even know how to respond to this. It's very interesting. Something I've never heard of any other school doing. Now, it's cool, and it's fun for the players and the actual, you know, students of Clemson University. From the outside, though, looking in, this is ridiculous. This is an absolute, you know, big-headed move of being able to put tombstones on your campus of top 25 teams you beat on either neutral fields or away from Death Valley. It's hilarious, but I gotta believe other schools are like, what are the Clemson Tigers doing now? What is this? I just have never heard anything like this. And, you know, my buddy texted me, he said, how about, you know, being a little bit bigger than just, you know, throwing out a tombstone for a win over, you know, number 1 Alabama. And yeah, he's probably a little butthurt about that because Alabama fan. But you know, I'm kind of torn. I don't know if I like it or I dislike it, but it's kind of cool. Something else I have never seen from another university in the nation. We'll be back.
The home of Coastal Carolina and the Carolina Panthers. This is WSEA Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting. Sports Radio 100.3. The Team.
Hour 2 of the drive is brought to you by Air Mechanical. Get a new high-efficient Amana system today. Air Mechanical, we're in your neighborhood.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team, with your boys, Pat Payone and Wally B.
No Wally today. We got Rusty Man in the keys in the back making sure everything goes smoothly for us. But I'm Pat Payone on The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. And whether you're listening on your radio at 100.3 FM, streaming it live through our website, teammyrtlebeach.com, or listening through the free app, the Sports Radio 100.3, The Team app, we welcome you to today's show, and thank you for listening. And if you missed hour number one, we went through Coastal Carolina getting a win in the College Basketball Invitational last night. They will play now on Monday against Loyola. That is going to be at the HTC Center at 7 p.m. You'll be able to hear that on our airwaves, Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. We also went through the play-in game victories last night for UC Irvine and Southern California, both teams coming back from deficits to win those games. So some pretty good basketball so far. We also went through some free agency fits, players like Adrian Peterson. Where do these players that have yet to sign with anybody? And I just got a tweet in response to my last segment. I'll read it in a little bit. We went through some fits for those teams. If the Houston Texans don't get Tony Romo, who's going to be their starting quarterback? And as I mentioned, you know, Tom Savage is a good piece to have. I don't think he wins you playoff games or gets you to the Super Bowl. So maybe they need to go out in there and get a quarterback like a Jay Cutler or a Tony Romo. But I also think you could help yourself for the future in the draft. And then we wrapped up the last segment of the 7 o'clock hour talking about the graveyard in Clemson. And Christian writes in, Florida State has a sod cemetery, been doing it way longer than Clemson. I had no idea. I had no idea that this is like a tradition around the nation. Not a clue. Not a clue. I thought it was pretty cool, but I could see how an outsider looking in would be like, it's a little big-headed, a little ridiculous. Just a tad. Hey, but it is hour number two, and I told you we are talking about the NCAA basketball tournament as it does get underway. First game of the day starts off at 12:15 today. And so reminding you again, go to our website, TeamMyrtleBeach.com. Click on the Million Dollar Madness bracket picture. Go ahead and sign up. Get your picks in before the start of the first game today. Again, the first game tips off at 12:15, so you got to get your picks in before then. If you make a perfect bracket, highly unlikely, but still a chance. But if you make a perfect bracket, that's a $1 million bracket. Not only that, locally, top five in our contest will get great prizes courtesy of Budweiser, sponsored by Backyard Sports Bar and Grill. And then also number one in our entire pool will get a 50-inch flat-screen TV courtesy of Backyard Sports Bar and Grill. If that doesn't make you sign up for our tournament, our group, our bracket, I don't know what will. Maybe beating myself. Not that that's going to be hard. I'll probably finish in the bottom 10. I will go through my picks over the next two segments. This one, I want to go over some of the best March Madness performances since 2011. You know, first off, let's talk. I mean, is this the best sports weekend of the year? I mean, you could probably say the Masters weekend's up there. For me, it is. The Daytona 500 is definitely up there. Maybe the first couple days of the NBA playoffs. Maybe the divisional round of the NFL playoffs. They're up there. But there is no better series of days on the sports calendar than the first week of the NCAA tournament. For one thing, unlike the other sports I just mentioned, this weekend is extra long and it lasts 4 days. It is packed from wall to wall with basketball, starting at noon and stretching well into the night. There is a lot to look forward to in this bracket, in this tournament as well. Pro basketball fans, you have a reason to watch. You get the chance to see how top prospects in next year's NBA draft will play, like UCLA's Lonzo Ball and Josh Jackson of Kansas. You're going to see how they perform on the NCAA's biggest stage. But college hoops, you know, supporters, they have a chance to see some of the nation's best players and Naismith Award semifinalists like Nigel Williams-Goss or Josh Hart. They'll be in action. And they could even potentially be squaring off in later rounds. But there are some really memorable upsets and really memorable moments and performances of March Madness. And I want to go into some of the best that have happened since 2011. I'm not going to go through the 10 through 6 picks that much. I'll just give a brief little thing on them. But top 5 we'll go through pretty good. There's a tie that I have for number 10, by the way. Tyler Zeller of the North Carolina Tar Heels in the round of 64 of the 2011 tournament. You know, this was an excellent performance for him that was, it really was interesting because he did win the 2012 ACC Player of the Year and went on to be a first-round pick. But he couldn't. He probably would have done that also if they hadn't gone out and beat up Long Island University of Brooklyn in the first round. But it certainly didn't hurt. He went 9-14 this game, scoring 32 points, grabbing 9 rebounds as the second-seeded Tar Heels dismantled the 15-seed Blackbirds. He wasn't the only player to bring his game to this one. Harrison Barnes, 24 points, 16 rebound, double-double. John Henson, 28 points, 11 rebound, double-double. Even Kendall Marshall notched 10 assists in this game. Those are four future NBA players on that. And if you're playing against them, you're going to lose by double digits more than likely. He's tied with Draymond Green of the Michigan State Spartans in the 2012 round of 64. Now, unfortunately for the Blackbirds of ULI, or is it LIU of Brooklyn? I don't even know what their moniker is. But so they had to play North Carolina 1 year. The next season, they got the Michigan State Spartans and Draymond Green. But he had his second triple-double, NCAA tournament triple-double, in this game. He's the only player to have a triple-double since 2011 in an NCAA tournament game. He had 24 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists. That is incredible. That is incredible. He also won this game. That's incredible. He won the game by himself. Nine is Eric Murray of the Texas Southern Tigers. You know, he had 38 points for the Texas Southern Tigers, including 3 three-pointers on 23 shots. Congratulations. You took 23 shots at 38 points. Dustin Hoge is number 8 of the Iowa State Cyclones in 2014 Sweet 16 matchup. They played 7-seeded UConn. He went 15 from 19 from the field, shooting a blistering 78.9% and scoring 34 points while adding 6 rebounds and 2 steals. But they didn't win. They didn't win over Kevin Ollie's Huskies as they had a surprise run to the title. That was the year that they had Shabazz Napier, by the way. Tyler Zeller is also on this list again at number 7 for the 2011 Sweet 16 game that he had. He had no problem taking over this game when he needed to, because they had players that like Harrison Barnes and Henson, who shot under 50% in this game. Instead, Zeller took over and had 29 points, going on the line 10 times, adding 12 rebounds, 4 assists, and 3 steals. He not only did that, he had a pretty impressive defensive battle against Marquette Golden Eagle and future NBA player Jimmy Butler. I didn't realize that, you know, that was a Marquette team with Jimmy Butler that had to go up against North Carolina. That's pretty interesting. Also on this list, number 6, Derek Williams of the Arizona Wildcats in 2011 with a Sweet 16 matchup. You know, he actually was the 2nd overall pick, and we've talked about him and how he's kind of been a bust. But he actually outperformed the number 1 overall player. That's the number 1 overall draft pick in that draft, Kyrie Irving. Irving had 28 points coming off the bench for the Duke Blue Devils. Williams, oh yeah, he dropped 32. Oh yeah, added 13 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And in the end, Arizona, led by Derek Williams, beat Kyrie Irving and the Duke Blue Devils. So pretty interesting right there. Getting to the top 5 now for you. Now also, I got to let you know, I know one name on this top 5, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. That just means that these guys who we have never even heard of, have big performances and lead their teams to wins that they probably shouldn't have. Getting a lot of tweets right now, so I'm trying to favorite them while we go through. Jeez, there's some bad ones in here. We'll get to these. But continue to go on Twitter, by the way. Call us up, 843-652-3776, if you want to give your Final Four picks and your champion as well and tell us why. But number 5 is Bryce Cotton of the Providence Flyers in the 2014 Round of 16 game for the Friars. Now, Bryce Cotton, what a good name, by the way. He scored 36 points and played all 40 minutes in this game, but the Friars did fall short, losing to the North Carolina Tar Heels by 2 points. Now, this is also the UNC team that would go on and play against Dustin Hoge, who also had a memorable performance in the NCAA tournament. But for everything Bryce Cotton did, he had an extremely great game, 36 points, and really just not enough for Providence as they did lose to North Carolina. Number 4 is Jeremy Morgan of the Northern Iowa Panthers and the 2016 Round of 32 game. Now, unlike other players on this list, Morgan had kind of an advantage because this game against Texas A&M went into 2 overtimes, and that gave him more time to pad the stats. Still, he played an impressive 49 out of 50 minutes and notched 36 points and 12 rebounds, double the numbers of any other teammate on his team. Now, unfortunately, the Panthers weren't able to pull off their 2nd straight upset after eliminating the 6-seeded Texas Longhorns in the first round. They then lost in the round it's not even saying who they lost to. But anyway, Northern Iowa lost. But Jeremy Morgan, 49 out of 50 minutes, 36 points, 12 rebounds. Incredible. Number three is Josh Haggins of Arkansas Little Rock of last year's tournament in the round of 64. You know, they pulled off the upset last year. 12-seeded Arkansas Little Rock beat Purdue last year, and it was all because of Josh Haggins. He picked the right time to have a career game. He put up a stunning 30 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, and 5 steals, and he did it all without ever turning the ball over or even occurring 2 fouls. He only had 1 foul in the game. That's pretty damn impressive. Pretty damn impressive, especially going up against a Purdue team, which, by the way, never high on the Purdue Boilermakers. Number 2 is Thomas Walkup. Yep, that guy. If you're asking who, it's okay. I asked the same question. Who is Thomas Walkup? Well, he played for the Lumberjacks of Stephen F. Austin, and this was from last year's first-round matchup. The Lumberjacks were heavy underdogs, probably even more so as they were going up against third-seeded West Virginia that ranked 6th in all of college basketball in defensive efficiency. But Stephen F. Austin, they had their school legend Thomas Walkup on their side. He dominated the game to such an extent that, unlike other players on this list, the upset wasn't even particularly close. He got to the line 20 times, making 19 of those free throws, en route to scoring 33 points. He also chipped in 9 rebounds as the Lumberjacks went on to beat the West Virginia Mountaineers, take this into consideration, by 14 points. A 14 seed beating a 3 seed by 14 points, and yes, it was thanks all to Thomas Walkup, who had 33 points in this win for the Lumberjacks.
And he's a really interesting looking guy.
Is he?
Big, like, Mormon beard.
Oh, yeah. I saw the picture as well.
It is
remarkable to see, you know, a picture and it takes you back. I remember this from last season and thinking, like, first of all, Stephen F. Austin, isn't that a football school? They don't really, you know, they don't show up for basketball. Well, they did. And they got a huge win over third-seeded West Virginia, which also makes you start questioning, will West Virginia lose in the first round again this year? The teams are historically, you know, if they lose the first or second round and don't make it very far and they're seeded high, I look into that a little bit more probably than others when filling out the bracket. But number one is a guy I have heard of. Thank the Lord. Thank everybody that the number one guy on my list is somebody I can actually talk about, because these other guys like Thomas Walkup, Josh Haggins, Jeremy Morgan, Bryce Cotton, all names you've never heard of and I've never heard of. Adrian Payne of the Michigan State Spartans, back in the round of 64, the first round of the 2014 NCAA tournament. Adrian Payne's number one on my list. Now, he did have a slight advantage over others in the game score. In just 24 minutes, he scored 41 points. 41 points in 24 minutes. That is marking the only time since 2011 that a player has dropped 40 points in an NCAA tournament. It is also one of two games at any time in that span where a player scored 40-plus points in 24 minutes. Now, while it may be a little short of an NCAA record for scoring, it is an extremely, extremely impressive performance, even more so when you add in the fact that Adrian Payne grabbed 8 rebounds and shot 17 free throw attempts without missing a single one in that game. Extremely impressive. Now, if you were to go beyond 2011, you could throw in there the other performances we've seen along NCAA history, and definitely could probably throw in there some more interesting moments like Christian Laettner and that entire thing. Now, he didn't have a great game, the best game in that one, but that play will always live on in my memory. Are we going to see, you know, some type of play this year that just really takes over the entire tournament and makes you believe, you know, or remember maybe years down the road? Remember back in 2017 when Blank hit that last second shot to beat Blank in the Blank round? Wow, what a Blank shot. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. Rusty just sits back and laughs whenever he knows I'm being ridiculous. But no, it's absolutely, you know, I cannot wait for this to get underway. I am so jacked up, and at the same time, I'm nervous because, you know, credibility is on the line. And like I said, we want to hear from you. We are opening up the phone lines, 843-652-3776. Again, 843-652-3776. We want to hear your Final Four picks. We want to hear your national champion pick. Go ahead and give us a call. Let us know. When we come back, not only will we go through our picks, Rusty and mine, we'll go through some of your picks on Twitter, and we will go ahead and get some phone calls going as well to hear your picks as well. I think, you know, based on my bracket, it's probably not going to happen this way, as I have all number one and two seeds except for one being in my Elite Eight. That usually never happens that way. But don't forget, you still have about 3 hours and 45 minutes to get your picks in. Go to TeamMyrtleBeach.com, click on the Million Dollar Madness Bracket Challenge picture, sign up, put your picks in. You got to get them in before the first game of today at 12:15. And if you make a perfect bracket, that's $1 million. You can also get a 50-inch flat-screen TV courtesy of Backyard Sports Bar and Grill if you finish number one in our bracket. Top five also get prizes courtesy of Budweiser through Backyard Sports Bar and Grill. Don't forget, TeamMyrtleBeach.com. That is our website. Go there. Make your picks. When we come back, we will run through some of our upsets we picked in our bracket. We will tell you who we have in the Sweet 16, and then the next segment after that, we'll go through the Elite Eight all the way to the national champion. Rusty and I will give our picks coming up on The Drive.
Two hours of a giant sucking sound every morning. The Drive with Pat Payone and Wally B. Weekday mornings at 7 on 100.3 The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive. 27 minutes past the hour. Got a couple of responses on my phone and on Twitter. My dad writes in, the opposing team gravesite is a pure recruiting genius ploy. It highlights all the Tigers away from home conquests, emphasizes national prominence. You're exactly correct. Let's see, going through other things. Mark says, I wrote Jimmy G because that saves tweet characters. He says, Adrian Peterson plays for Rikers Island Prison for child abuse. That's not very nice. Mark, who is also a Patriots fan, says, I'd take Jadeveon Clowney and some draft picks for Jimmy G. Of course you would. They're not going to trade that, though. Get out of here. Get out of here. Still going through your picks on Twitter. Keep coming in with your Final Four picks and your national champion pick. We're getting a lot of responses on that, so thank you very much. But let's go to the phone lines real quick. We got Steve. Steve, what's going on this morning?
Hey, guys, listen. Always, always, always enjoy your show. Couple things. One, for all the noise riding through Columbia yesterday, Frank Martin, what a job he's done in 5 years.
You are correct, yeah.
I don't think that people can truly, that's not followed the program like I have, can understand what that man inherited 5 years ago. And to really, you know, deserve to be in the tournament last year and have us there this year, I think that's one of the greatest accomplishments at South Carolina, in my opinion. Now, that being said, I do have them going out in the second round to Duke, but I do have them beating Marquette. But Final Four picks, Villanova over Notre Dame and Kentucky over Louisville. And then in the final, Kentucky beating Louisville. I think Kentucky is the most talented team in America who just showed up at the end of February, beginning of March, and started to prove that. And the best team in the country, and then I'm off as North Carolina. Got those guys going out in the eight because of their head basketball coach, Roy Williams, classic underachiever. I think his talent this year is head and shoulders above a lot of the. I mean, I think he's got the best team in the country, but he'll find a way in the Elite Eight to screw that up.
Go ahead. I have the same thing. I've got North Carolina losing to Kentucky as well in the Elite Eight. I think that's a hard matchup for North Carolina, who has looked suspect at times on defense. And so I think that's something that John Calipari and that young veteran or that young athletic offense of Kentucky can exploit pretty much the entire game. Appreciate the phone call, Steve. Really appreciate that. And continue to give us your phone calls, 843-652-3776. Give us your Final Four picks and your national champion. I am writing them down so we can go ahead and tabulate who we have winning the entire thing, and that's our first vote for Kentucky, by the way. There's a lot of votes right now coming in for Villanova and Duke as the national champion, so I thought that was pretty interesting. We also have one vote now for UCLA as well. So thank you for I'm writing this down as I'm talking. Thank you for going on Twitter. Continue to go on Twitter at 100 through the team. We're going to go ahead and go through our upset picks in the first round so far. So today, you know, it's going to be interesting to see over the next 2 days what upsets actually happen. But I did pick UNC Wilmington over Virginia. I just think Virginia offensively does not have that much talent. Defensively, one of the best defenses in the nation. But the speed and offensive ability, because they are one of the best scoring teams in the nation, that being UNCW, I think they have the ability to pull the upset on UVA, who's just not looked good at times this year. I also told you yesterday I don't trust Baylor as far as I can throw them. Therefore, I have them losing in the first round to 14 seed New Mexico State. I also don't like Purdue that much this year, so I took the team that has the longest winning streak in the entire nation, the Vermont Catamounts, the 13th seed over the four, took that as another upset as well. I also like Rhode Island. I think they're one of the best teams coming into the tournament right now in terms of being able to pull an upset. They're just playing so well, and they actually have their full roster, which they didn't have all season long. They have their full roster now. So I took Rhode Island, the 11 seed, over Creighton, the 6 seed. I also took the trendy pick of Middle Tennessee over Minnesota, that 12-5 matchup. I have two 12-5 upsets, that being UNCW and Middle Tennessee beating Minnesota. So that's my other one. And then not much of an upset, but in terms of seeding, I did take Wichita State, the 10 seed, beating Dayton, the 7 seed in that matchup. So those are my upsets in the first round, which more than likely means that those aren't going to happen at all. But those are the upsets that I picked. I also have Rhode Island beating Oregon in the next round and making it into the Sweet 16, so that could be pretty interesting. I also have an upset of Michigan over Louisville in the second round, so Michigan moves on to the Sweet 16 and then gets the big win to move on to Elite 8 over Rhode Island. I also have Middle Tennessee making a big run as a 12 seed to not only knock off Minnesota in the first round to beat Butler in the second round, so they will be in the Sweet 16 in my bracket. And then I have UNCW not only beating UVA, but beating Florida, who is just an injured roster, and they've also shown the ability to play great defense, but not great offense. So I have UNCW into the Sweet 16 as well. So right there, I have three double-digit seeds in the Sweet 16, and then I have one 7 seed beating a 2 seed. That's Michigan beating Louisville to move on to the Sweet 16 as well. Rusty, who do you have in terms of some first-round upsets?
I have the same one that you have, the UNCW. I have them advancing.
Yeah.
But then after that, they're done.
Yeah, it could be.
That's how I see it.
That's understandable. And a little risky on my part.
It is. I've got Vermont as well over Purdue. After watching them, the last game they played in their conference tournament, they didn't look good. So I've got them over Purdue.
Okay.
And I think for the big upsets, that's it.
That's it?
For
me. You know, some people go conservative, some people go a little crazy, and I talked to you guys about this. I'm in a work pool, not for my work, for my dad's company, and him and I are partners in this. We have two different, it's a survivor pool, and your seed, the seeds that you pick, points accumulate throughout the entire, and that ends up being the tiebreaker if you last throughout the entire thing. But you gotta pick three teams in the first round. And we did two different groups as I mentioned. We went really risky with one, picking all double digit seeds. And if we do that, we more than likely will be in first place if they all three win. And then we went with a conservative bracket and really picked some teams that we believe would win their first round matchups, but not go very far in the tournament. That's how a lot of people do with these brackets. I mean, some people fill it the exact opposite way that maybe the majority of us fill it out. They know who they think is going to win the national title, and they work backwards. And so if you believe that Kansas wins the entire thing, you go ahead and write in Kansas first, and then you write in Kansas all the way along and see who, you know, what matchups they're going to win. That's how some people do it. They know who the Final Four is going to be. That's who, at least they think they know.
Well, and I think I've filled out 5 brackets now.
Yeah?
But they're all different, so I've got one that's full of upsets.
Oh, yeah.
So.
No, I have 4 different brackets, two of them are actually 5 different brackets. One for our station, again, teamwordlebeach.com. I'll keep hawking that. And I did the same bracket that I did that on ESPN.com, and then I have three other brackets of three other different national champions and other picks throughout the entire tournament. But I'm set in stone with my picks that I threw in for our cumulus bracket that you guys can participate in. And we're getting a lot of picks on Twitter right now. So let me go through these real quick. Bryce, he says his final four, and we will get to our final fours in just a little bit, by the way. Bryce says UCLA out of the South, Kansas out of the Midwest, West Virginia out of the West, and Duke out of the East, with Duke over UCLA in the final. That could be a pretty interesting final four and a pretty interesting national championship. Kevin writes in Villanova, Gonzaga, the two number one seeds he has in. He has Oregon. Oregon is a three seed. Oregon's missing one of their top shot blockers and three-point players. So that's why I had Oregon losing to Rhode Island in the second round. But Oregon, Kentucky finish out his top four with Villanova winning the entire national title. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. Kevin has Nova, Gonzaga, Oregon, UCLA with Nova beating UCLA. So that's the second time we've seen UCLA losing the national title. Mark writes in with Nova, Duke, Oregon, Kentucky in his final four. So that is two seeds, a three seed, and a one seed, with Nova being the overall number one seed winning the national title. My buddy Neville texted me. He says Duke, Florida State, North Carolina, Oregon. That's a pretty interesting one with three ACC teams with a one seed, a two seed, and two three seeds, with Duke and North Carolina meeting up for the fourth time of this season, with Duke winning that game and taking the overall series 3-1. Dino also writes in with Duke, Louisville, Arizona, UCLA being his final four. That's pretty darn close to mine, although I have Kansas over Louisville in terms of that region. And he has UCLA beating Duke in the national championship. Reed writes in. He's got Nova, Xavier, Butler, and Louisville in his final four. That could be pretty interesting. Very interesting. But he has Nova versus Butler in the national championship, Nova getting the win in there. So that is now three votes for Nova, two votes for Duke, one vote for UCLA. And who did Steve say he had winning it? I'm trying to think. Oh, he had Villanova as well.
Yes.
So that's four votes for Villanova. All right, when we come back from this next commercial break, Rusty and I are going to give our final four picks, and we're going to give our national championship pick as well. But I got to let you know, we at Cumulus Media have another sweet deal for you. It is half off a $60 gift certificate to Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery. So for $30, you will get a $60 gift certificate for great food, great drinks, and great fun. That is $30 for a $60 gift certificate to Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery. Go to our website, teammyrtlebeach.com, click on the sweet deals picture, and get your $60 gift certificate for $30 today to Tilted Kilt Pub and Eatery. Not only that, while you're there, go to you're already on our website, teammyrtlebeach.com. Go ahead and just sign up for the March Madness Million Dollar Bracket. You have nothing to lose. It costs nothing for you to get in on that, but you have everything to win. Not only could you win $1 million if you have a perfect bracket, but you could win a 50-inch flat-screen TV courtesy of Backyard Sports Bar and Grill and other great prizes to the top five courtesy of Budweiser through Backyard Sports Bar and Grill. So don't waste any time. Got to get your picks in before the first game today at 12:15. Not going to emphasize that much more, as I've already done about 17 times today. When we come back from this next commercial break, Rusty and I not only give our final four picks, we're going to give our national champion pick as well. That's all coming up on The Drive.
You're yelling at the radio right now. Stop it and call us at 843-652-3776. You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team.
Welcome back to The Drive on Sports Radio 100.3, The Team. And yes, give us a phone call right now, 843-652-3776. We want to hear from you on your final four picks and also who you have winning the national title. Dino writes in, dang, Pat. You picking every upset, ha ha. There's 32 games. I picked six upsets. And yeah, there. I mean, there's a lot of them that a lot of people are talking about. I don't think anybody's talking about Baylor, New Mexico State. That's one that I went out on a limb for. People are talking about Rhode Island being a surprise team this year, UNCW being a surprise team this year, Middle Tennessee being able to pull the upset. So I went with them. Now, I also have them going on to the second round, a couple of those teams. So those might be the upsets that you're talking about. But my Sweet 16 reads as, let's get to the Elite Eight. Nova and Duke from the East, Gonzaga and Arizona, those are both the 1 and 2 seeds right there. And then I also have the 1 and 2 seed in the South of UNC versus Kentucky. The Midwest, a little different for me. I went with Kansas, the number one seed, and so I have all four number one seeds getting to Elite Eight, three of the number two seeds getting to Elite Eight, and then I have my outlier. I threw Michigan in there, and the reason I put Michigan in, they really played extremely well, and they're hitting their stride at the right time. I like hot teams, and I think they're one of the hottest after they won the Big Ten championship, but it's a team that has such an incredible story around them that it really brought them together after their airplane slides off the runway, and I think that they could run that pretty deep into the NCAA tournament. Now, they do, in my bracket, end in the Elite Eight as Kansas would get the win over them, and so my Final Four, to go ahead and give it to you, I do have Duke being able to beat Nova in the East, so Duke's my Final Four from the East. I have Arizona just being too athletic and too powerful of a team for Gonzaga to overcome. So Arizona, the 2 seed, moving on in the West. I also have the 2 seed Kentucky being able to withstand what North Carolina is able to do. And I think I mentioned it yesterday on Facebook Live. I really think there are three players on Kentucky that could really take this team pretty far, maybe to the national title in this NCAA tournament. So I had Kentucky beating North Carolina, and then, as I mentioned, Kansas beating Michigan. So my Final Four reads as Duke, the number 2 seed, Arizona, the number 2 seed, Kentucky, the number 2 seed, and Kansas, the number 1 seed. I have Duke beating Arizona, going to the national title, and Kentucky beating Kansas to go to the national championship, with Duke being my overall winner, being able to beat Kentucky by living and dying by the three, the free throw line, and starting to play pretty darn good defense, if you ask me. I think Kentucky is special. I think they're very talented. But, with everything surrounding this Duke, with this Duke team, with Grayson Allen now coming off the bench, I think he's found his role. I like Duke a lot, and that's why I have them winning the national title. Rusty, who do you have in your Final Four, and tell me your national title winner?
Okay, in my Final Four, in the East, I've got Duke.
Okay.
West, surprise, Gonzaga.
It's not a bad pick. I think Gonzaga could surprise a lot. First of all, surprise, they're a number one seed. But I think that they could go further than people are really giving them credit for.
And in the South, like you, I've got Kentucky. I see that being a no-brainer.
In the Midwest?
In the Midwest, I have Louisville.
So you have a 2 seed, a 2 seed, a 1 seed, and a 2 seed. So correct. just like myself, 3 2 seeds and 1 1 seed, but a little bit different mixture of there. Who do you have in the national championship?
I have Duke and Kentucky, just like you.
Okay, and who do you have winning it?
I actually have Duke winning it.
Come on.
I should have picked different.
Don't do that. No, you have to go with what your gut tells you, and your gut tells you Duke's going to win this national title. You know what? The people in Vegas, their guts are telling them too, because right now the odds on favorite in terms of Vegas betting lines is Duke to win the national title. And so it's not out of the question that we're picking Duke. As much as I don't want Duke to win the national title,
exactly,
I believe that they have the talent enough to go ahead and do it. I really do.
I definitely do. And I would love to see a Duke-Kentucky matchup.
Yeah.
It would be awesome.
Historical value. I would also love to see the North Carolina-Duke matchup as well. Have that go down again. I have that in one of my brackets, with actually North Carolina evening the series for that one. So I'll tell you, I really believe in this NCAA tournament. And by the way, give us a phone call, 843-652-3776. We want to hear from you, your Final Four picks and your national championship pick. I really think there are 7 teams that could win the national title this year. Villanova easily could win it again, back-to-back. I think Duke, we picked them, so I think they could win. I also think Arizona could win it this year, the number 2 seed out of the West. And Gonzaga, it wouldn't surprise me if they were to make a national championship run, but it would be the most surprising out of these seven teams to do that. I also believe that Kansas, the number one seed, is the only team out of that Midwest bracket that has a chance to win it. I'm not sold on Louisville, and I think they're susceptible to a lot of teams in this bracket, including Kansas. I think there are three teams in the South that could win the national title, that being North Carolina, UCLA, and Kentucky.
Most definitely.
And so did I just give more picks than I said? That's eight picks. So eight teams. Eight teams can win the national title. Villanova, Duke, Gonzaga, Arizona, North Carolina, UCLA, Kentucky, all from the South bracket, and then one from the Midwest, Kansas. I'm not reading enough into Louisville. That especially when you lose in the first round of your ACC tournament. Yes, it was to Duke who won the tournament, but they didn't look that good.
I'm sort of gambling on this.
No.
I don't think they'll make it that far, in all honesty, but they're my interesting pick.
You don't have to go to me and say this is why I'm picking them. For every reason that I have Louisville losing to Michigan, that could be reasons the opposite way of why they could win the national title.
Right.
And more than likely, because I picked them to lose in the second round, they will make a run at the national title.
And you know as well as I do, tonight at midnight, there's going to be at least one game we're going to look and say, what the hell happened?
Yeah, you're right. you're definitely right. There's probably going to be multiple games. You're going to be like, all right,
exactly.
Bracket blown. Don't care anymore. There goes my two of my Final Four seeds. I've had that happen, by the way. Where on the first day, and I want to say it was within the first 3 hours of all of the competition, I had two Final Four teams lose.
Exactly.
And I want to say was it last year that Michigan State lost and they were the two seed?
I believe so.
They were one of my Final Four teams, and I can't remember the other team that I had in the Final Four that lost in the first round as well. It just happens. You never know. Any given team could win on any given game in the NCAA tournament. That's what makes it so great. That's why people watch each and every single game. You may not know a single player on most of these rosters, but you will know their names if they pull a huge upset, and you will know these universities and go ahead and just maybe that makes you become a fan of these universities for the future. But the greatest thing is that we don't have any idea. We could see a number one team lose to a 16 seed. Now, I don't think that's going to happen today or tomorrow, but it's a possibility. That's what's great about March Madness. Keep going on Twitter at 100 through the team. Let us know who your Final Four and national championship picks are. When we come back, I'm not even going to have a final word because I'm going to go through each of the 16 games today for the TV coverage to let you know what times they are and what channels you can watch those on. That's all coming up on The Drive.
It's time for the final word. The show is almost over, but the conversation continues throughout the day on Twitter at 1003 The Team. Enjoy your workday. We're wrapping up ours.
Final 3 minutes of The Drive on this Thursday, March 16th, and Ashley writes in her Final Four. She says Duke, West Virginia, Kansas, Kentucky, with Duke getting the win over Kansas in the national championship. So add another tally mark to Duke. Right now we have four Villanova winners and three Duke winners, not including Rusty in my pick. So I guess that's five Duke and four Villanova. Final Word is just going to go ahead and tell you what you can watch today. There is really some great games today, starting off at noon today. I believe it's 12:15 is the first actual game time. But that is number 5 Notre Dame versus number 12 Princeton out of the West region. That is on CBS at noon. You'll have number 5 UVA at number 12 UNCW. That is in the East regional, 12:30 True TV. Number 4 Butler taking on number 13 Winthrop in the South region, 1 p.m. on TNT. You also have number 1 Gonzaga, number 16 South Dakota State, West Regional, that is 1:30 TBS. Number 4 West Virginia, number 13 Bucknell, West Regional, 2:30 p.m. on CBS. Number 4 Florida versus number 13 East Tennessee State in the East Region, 3 p.m. True TV. Number 5 Minnesota versus number 12 Middle Tennessee State, South Regional, 3:50 TNT. Number 8, Northwestern versus number 9, Vanderbilt, West Regional, 4:20 TBS. Number 6, Maryland versus number 11, Xavier, West Regional, 6:45 TNT. You also have number 1, Villanova versus number 16, Mount St. Mary's, East Regional, 7 p.m. CBS. Number 4, Purdue versus number 13, the Catamounts of Vermont. That is in the Midwest Regional, 7:15 on True TV. Number 7, St. Mary's versus number 10, VCU, West Regional, 7:15, TBS. Number 3, Florida State versus number 14, Florida Gulf Coast. I think that could be a pretty good game. West Regional, 9:15 on TNT. Number 8, Wisconsin versus number 9, Virginia Tech, East Regional, 9:30, CBS. And number 2, Arizona versus number 15, North Dakota, West Regional, 9:45, TBS. And then the final game of the night, number 5, Iowa State versus number 12, Nevada, Midwest Regional, 9:55, True TV. 10 o'clock start? That probably means I'm going to be so tired when I get into work tomorrow. It should be a fun day of watching college basketball, though. Thank you, everyone, for the phone calls. Thank you for going on Twitter, at 100 through the team. We'll be back tomorrow for Rusty. I'm Pat Payone. This is The Drive.
Your sports leader from Little River to Loras, Conway to Carolina Forest. We are WSCA, Atlantic Beach, Myrtle Beach. Cumulus Broadcasting Sports Radio, 100.3, The Team.